Peace is a subject that is on a lot of minds these days. The word peace, when used in the context of the church, is perhaps one of the most misunderstood terms of Christianity. When we talk about peace in the church, what do we mean? Most of us think of peace as the absence of conflict. A peaceful person is one who is quietly behaved and untroubled. Many suggest that peace consists of harmony in personal relationships and freedom from disturbing thoughts or emotions. To hold one's peace means to be quiet. To keep the peace means to obey. To make peace means to surrender. And to rest in peace means to die. This explains how peace and passivity have become synonymous in our time. Given these choices, is it any wonder that we feel some uncertainty about what peace means in our lives? I think clearly a Christian understanding of peace means more than tranquility on a personal level or polite resignation on a social level. Such simple-minded definitions of peace may have been what motivated Jesus to say that what he did when he said, "I did not come to bring peace, but a sword." Jesus' own understanding of peace was a fierce and a realistic one. For peace tends to come with sharp edges and hard choices. The peace that Jesus offers sometimes comes nailed to a cross. Now, the Hebrews believed that peace, or the word is shalom in Hebrew, embraces all of human life. Shalom meant wholeness and integrity as evidenced by health and prosperity. To have shalom meant to be in a right relationship with God and with others. The Hebrew people knew the reality of shalom as individuals and as a nation. The Jews were survivors of adversity and extermination and exile and homelessness. The Hebrews knew little about a serene and calm world. They believed that shalom or peace meant loyalty in their relationships and security in their communities, justice in their courts and good fortune in their commerce. And above all, joy in their lives, the sure evidence of God's presence and favor. One thing was certain for the Jews. They did not believe that peace was the absence of war. In their lifetime, there were too many enemies who wanted their land and wanted their kingdom. Too many others who continued to threaten their faith in the one true God. The chosen people of Israel had to fight for their lives. So peace meant to them harmony among those who battled against common enemies. God was not viewed in those days as a pacifist, as one who avoided conflict. But God seemed to view peace more as the presence of justice than the absence of struggle. God's peace was not passivity, nor cheap peace of mind. It was a deep peace delivered by God alone. Now, this is the background against which Jesus appeared, healing lepers yet overturning tables, raising the dead yet cursing the fig tree. There are times when it seems Jesus spoke out of both sides of his mouth, at least if you look at those two lessons we have for today. In Matthew, he says, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace on earth." But in John, peace is of the utmost value in Jesus' life. He says, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you." Now, these two sure seem to contradict each other, and it makes our task of defining peace all that much more difficult. And yet, The more I study these passages, the more I believe that Jesus used these two contrasting views of peace in differing contexts to help us define peace in realistic ways for our lives. Peace means different things in our world. The quest for peace in the Middle East will require different strategies than our quest for peace on our city streets. And those are different than the peace we seek in our relationships. Perhaps our quest for peace will begin with the recognition of what peace is not. Peace is not the restlessness that drains our days, nor is it the fear that keeps us up at night, nor the rivalry that drives us one against the other. Beyond this, a definition of realistic and fierce peace begins with the recognition that God alone is our peace. Even though we may seek peace in different ways, for Christians, the vision of peace is the same. The vision is centered on the one who was known as the Prince of Peace. Jesus, by his life and his ministry, showed us the way of peace, inner peace, and the path to societal peace as well. We are called to rely on God to bring peace to our lives and our world. But you know, a fierce and realistic peace is also a patient peace. Such a peace knows that transformation of people or society does not necessarily happen overnight. It doesn't whine or complain when others don't understand or see the vision that lies ahead of us. Yet peace is also something driven by urgency. A fierce and realistic peace is fueled by the belief that postponing the resolution of conflict or disagreements may be fatal. Granted, patience and urgency seem often in tension with one another. A political activist of a number of years ago put it this way. He said, we need to live our lives as if we have all the time, hence all the patience in the world. But we also need to live our lives as though without change, the world will end tomorrow. The world situation today is the perfect example of this tension between patience and urgency in our quest for peace. There's an urgency to do everything possible to bring those responsible for all these terrorist attacks to justice and to eliminate this threat from society. And yet there is a need for patience in doing everything we can to be sure to avoid harming innocent people. In all of life, in global politics and in our relationships with our friends, we're patient in our quest for peace, but we're urgent in our pursuit. A fierce and a realistic peace also implies that God expects us to be reconcilers with others. If we're disciples of Jesus Christ, one of our roles is to seek to bring people together. Those who are estranged, whether they're children in the kitchen at home arguing with one another, two co-workers at the office, or two world leaders on the scaffold of war. We cannot rest easy on the achievement of mere truth, which is no more than the cessation of hostility. A realistic peace is much more than a personal contentment. It involves the way we relate and the way we live in community with other people. This will not only involve our friends and our families, but perfect strangers as well. I think it's so appropriate on this World Communion Sunday that we should talk about peace. For this is a peace meal. It's a meal of reconciliation to God and to one another. The unity we share at the table of the Lord is a reminder that we are not alone in this quest for peace. Today we gather symbolically around this table with Christians from all over the world. And we do so with special prayers. Prayers for a peaceful world. Prayers for a world guided by love. And so I invite you, come to the table and share in this meal of peace. Amen.